55, verse 8. For my thoughts are not your ways, my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. As the rain and the snow come down from heaven and do not return to it without watering the earth and making it bud and flourish, so that it yields seed for the sower and bread for the eater, so is my word that goes out from my mouth. It will not return to me empty, but will accomplish what I desire and achieve the purpose for which I sent it. You will go out in joy and be led forth in peace. The mountains and hills will burst into song before you, and all the trees of the field will clap their hands. Instead of the thorn bush will grow the pine tree, and instead of briars the myrtle will grow. This will be for the Lord's renown, for an everlasting sign which will not be destroyed. Now I would like to look at this passage in primarily verses 8 and 9, where it talks about God's thoughts and his ways in the context of two stories, one from the Old Testament, the fall of Jericho, and one from the New Testament, the crucifixion of Christ. Now the fall of Jericho can be found in the book of Joshua, and Bryn read part of that this morning. But the story begins in chapter 1 with a promise. Verse 3, it says, God says, I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. And then in verses 6 to 9, there's three commands that God gives them. And he tells Joshua to be strong and courageous. Be strong and very courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. And so they head out, and we follow them in chapter 2, where the spies enter the city, and they are encouraged by Rahab, who hides them. And then in chapter 3, where they cross the Jordan, and you don't have to turn there, I'll just read it. In verse 15, we read that the Jordan is at flood stage all during the harvest. Yet as soon as the priests who carried the ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away. In verse 17, the priest who carried the ark of the covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan, while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. Now it started with a promise, and then there were miracles. There were evidence to support what God is speaking to them. Now the Israelites had been in the desert for 40 years, and this was the next generation who would have grown up knowing the desert to be their only home, manna to be their only food, and all the stories of old and the promises of new to be their only fireside stories. And I think that there would have been a lot of adrenaline and male fighting testosterone in that camp. And I think that as they were coming across the Jordan, there would have been a lot of excitement building. And I think that there would have been a lot of expectation for a great fight for the city. And all of this would have just grown and increased as they neared. And then we can pick up the story in Joshua 6. And I'll read Joshua 6, 1 to 7. Now Jericho was tightly shut up because of the Israelites. No one went out and no one came in. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have delivered Jericho into your hands, along with its king and its fighting men. March around the city once with all the armed men. Do this for 6 days. Have 7 priests carry trumpets of rams, horns in front of the ark. On the 7th day, march around the city 7 times with the priests blowing the trumpets. When you hear them sound a long blast on the trumpets, have all the people give a loud shout. Then the wall of the city will collapse, and the people will go up, every man straight in." So Joshua, son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, "Take up the ark of the covenant of the Lord, and have 7 priests carry trumpets in front of it." And he ordered the people, "Advance, march around the city with the armed guard going ahead of the ark of the Lord." And so instead of fighting, they had to march. And not only that, they had to march in silence. No fighting, no yelling, no nothing, only marching. And then they had to return to their camp, eat their manna, go to bed, and wake up the next day only to march. Is God sovereign? Does he know what he's doing? But his ways are not our ways, and his thoughts are not our thoughts. Now, I think one of the hardest things for the Israelites would have been to hear the jeering and mocking of the people of Jericho and not be able to retaliate. I think that this would have been a very humbling thing to remain silent. The people would have heard what the Israelites had done to other nations, and Rahab tells the spies that a great fear of them had fallen on them, so that all who lived in the land were melting in fear. They had heard that the Lord had dried up the Red Sea and how they had destroyed other nations. She said that their hearts melted and everyone's courage failed. But I think that the people of Jericho probably would have gained more courage each day as they saw the Israelites come and then march and not fight, not attack, not even say anything, and then leave. And I think that they might have thought that they looked like cowards, like fools, that they looked like they were retreating. Why didn't they attack? Were they scared? And I think that they would have done everything in their power to mock and belittle not only the Israelites, but their God. And I think that a lot of the soldiers would have begun to wonder what God was doing. Maybe wonder if Joshua had heard God correctly because he was leading them. They didn't hear God say that to them. Because this certainly was not how they expected to conquer the city. And this certainly wasn't how they would have done it themselves. But God's ways are not our ways, and he is sovereign. Now, as we could see with the kids a little while ago, God's will is perfect, and it cannot be thwarted. And in verse 20, we pick up the story, and it says, "When the trumpet sounded, the people shouted, and at the sound of the trumpet, when the people gave a loud shout, the wall collapsed. So every man charged straight in, and they took the city." Sovereignty is all-knowing. God had had a plan for the Israelites. His plan was in place before they left Egypt. His plan was in place before the creation of the dawn. And nothing could stop him from doing what he pleased. He had made a promise to his chosen people, and it came to pass, even though it was not how they expected. I'd also like to take a minute to look at a story from the New Testament, the crucifixion of Christ. Now, this story also starts with a promise. The people of Israel's hope was in the Messiah. They knew the prophecies. They believed the promises of God. They were waiting with eager expectation for their leader, for their Savior, for their King. And so many believed that Jesus was the one they had been waiting for. There was evidence. There were miracles to confirm. He healed the sick. Sorry. Lacey's my trusty assistant. He healed the sick. He fed the 5,000. He spoke as one with authority. He walked on water, calmed the storm, gave sight to the blind, and quieted the Pharisees. He gave them hope. He was going to be their Redeemer. They grew more and more excited. But then all their hopes were dashed when Jesus was captured, tortured, and then crucified. They had put so much hope in him. And now this, now nothing. He let them mock him, beat him, spit on him, and torture him. The very same man who had raised the dead could not seem to stop these mere soldiers. But what seemed to many of his followers as Jesus not being able to stop them was not so at all. In Isaiah 53, verse 4, it says, and this was a prophecy from before, that yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him, and afflicted. And in verse 10, it says, yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer. The will of the Lord will prosper in his hand. And I think when I was preparing this, one of the most striking things to me also was that in the same way that the Israelites remained silent as they marched, Jesus remained silent, and he was humbled. And he remained silent and let him do all these things because he knew that God was sovereign, and he saw God's plan and his intention. And so he allowed God to humble him, and he remained silent before him. And God actually prayed that this cup would be taken from him. He did not enjoy this, but he saw the bigger picture. Sin cannot frustrate the purposes of the Almighty. Satan had a plan for Jesus, but God's plan was bigger. The evil intentions of men cannot frustrate the decrees of God. The Pharisees had a plan, but God's plan was better. This was God's sovereignty in action. This was for his glory and his renown. And yet the disciples did not understand. Was God losing? And an interesting thing to me in all of this is the amount of times that Jesus tried to warn the disciples of what was going to happen. In each of the Gospels, he tells them at least twice that he was going to be captured and tortured. And it doesn't get much plainer than Matthew 20, verse 18, where he says, "We are going up to Jerusalem. The Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will turn him over to the Gentiles to be mocked and flogged and crucified. On the third day, he will be raised to life." But they didn't understand, and Peter actually took him aside and rebuked him and said, "Never, this will never happen to you," because they believed that he was the Messiah. There was evidence, there were miracles, there was a promise. And this could never be because it didn't fit into how they thought it was going to be or how they expected it to be. And they didn't understand what Jesus was telling them. And I believe that this can often happen to us as well. We hear something from God, or we believe that we heard something from God, but we begin to doubt it or question it because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't line up with how we thought it was going to happen or what we expected to happen. And I was speaking to Margaret Enns about this, and she said, and I liked how she put it, that God can sow for the future, that he has prophetic sowings, and that there are things that in that time that we don't understand, but in the future we will. In a passage that I liked, and for time reasons I'll just paraphrase it and not read it, but from Luke 24, after Jesus has risen from the dead and he's on the road to Emmaus and he meets the two travelers, and they're discouraged and they're downcast, and he asks them why, and they look at him all surprised, and, "Oh, haven't you heard?" And so they begin to tell him what's happened. And then they explain that the reason why they're so discouraged is because they had hoped, and this is quoted directly, that they had hoped that he was going to be the one to redeem Israel. They had hoped, and it wasn't happening. And Jesus responds to them by saying, "How foolish you are and slow of heart to believe." And the part that I love is after that, that it says that beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. And that after that, their eyes were opened and they understood. And then later in the chapter, he meets with the disciples and they too are discouraged and they don't understand and they're confused. And then he meets with them and he starts saying stuff to them and they're slowly kind of trying to put it together. But then it also says that he spoke to them about what had happened and he reiterated the things that he had said before. But this time it said that he opened their minds so that they could understand the scriptures. And he goes on to explain things to them and they understood. He opened their minds. And we see that the same thing happened with Job, that he, after everything, he says that my ears had heard of you, but now my eyes have seen. And the last parallel that I want to draw between these two things is that there's a certain amount of time that some of these things take. And for the Israelites, it was 40 years in the desert, or it was 7 days marching around the city. And 7 days can seem like a very long time when you're expecting something to happen right away. And with the crucifixion of Christ, it was maybe 3 days that he was in the grave, or it was many years that they were waiting for the Messiah, but that there was a certain time after a certain period that they understood. "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. The Lord is in heaven. He does whatever he pleases. I am God, and there is none other. I am God, and there is none like me. I say, my purpose will stand, and I will do all that I please. So is my word that goes out from my mouth. It will not return to me empty, but will accomplish what I desire and achieve the purposes for which I sent it. And we can read both of these stories, and especially the story of Jesus, with hope, because we know the outcome. We know what's going to happen. But that's not how it is often in our own lives. Things don't go as we expected them to, or as we planned them to. And we often, in that time, don't see any hope, or because we can't see the outcome. Now, I learned this lesson in a somewhat dramatic fashion last spring as Emmy and I were traveling in Europe. And we had gone with our family to Holland for family reunion, and then Emmy and I went to Prague for a week, and we were taking the train. And you have to understand that I like to organize and I like to plan, and I spent many months planning this trip, and I had a nice blue folder with lots of pieces of paper that were nicely typed out, and I had everything very organized. I knew the days that we were leaving, the train schedules. I even had backup train schedules in case we missed a connection or in case we just decided to stay somewhere longer. And I had the hostel booked. I had the address, the phone number, a backup phone number. I had tickets for things booked. And I knew exactly, I had a little book that I had read, and I knew what we were going to do on each day. And all of this was in my blue folder, and everything happened exactly as we had planned. Or as I had planned, more like it. And we had a great time. So we stay there for 4 days, and then we are going back home, and we are going to take, or back to Holland, and we are going to take the night train back, and just as I had planned. And we had made reservations because I had planned it that way. And we are going to get a night train. You can sleep on the train. So we were going to leave at 10 o'clock at night and arrive in Frankfurt at 6 in the morning, and we would have slept and we would have been rested. And then we're going to wait for half an hour, which is a perfect time to wait in a train station, and because just enough time, and but not too long. And then we are going to catch another train to Holland and arrive in Holland at 10 in the morning, where my mom and aunt would be, and just in time to have coffee, because that's the time that you have coffee in Holland. And not as I planned, but I go along with it. And then we are going to spend the day in Holland with my aunt visiting, and then fly back to Canada the next day. And this was all in my book, and it was all planned. And so we headed out to the train station for 10 o'clock, and I planned that we should be there half an hour early because things can happen, and half an hour is a good amount of time to prevent things from things happening really badly. So we arrive at the train station, and I look on the board, and the train's not on the board, but it's planned, so it has to be. And so then I asked someone. It's kind of hard to find someone that speaks English, so we find someone, and it turns out, unlike I had planned, that there are two train stations in Prague. I didn't know this. No one told me this. We just went to the one that we arrived at, because that seemed logical to me. But that's okay, because we have half an hour, so we can get to the other train station. So this man says, no, you want to stay here, and another train will come and take you there. But that train, if he even understood, because they don't speak English and I don't speak Czech, and it would get us 3 minutes before our train was supposed to leave, and that's not a good amount of time. So I didn't really trust that. So then I talked to someone else, and they're like, well, you can take the subway. And we just come to the subway, and okay, that made more sense. We pack up our stuff and we run to the subway, but I don't actually know where the train station, because it doesn't say train station on the thing. So I'm asking someone, and there's a girl, and she's like, oh, yeah, you need to take the train one stop that way. And I'm like, you're sure? Main train station. Yeah, one stop that way. But I didn't totally trust it. But we got on the train, and then I asked someone else, and I'm like, how do you get to the main train station? And she's like, oh, no, you need to go four stops that way. Isn't how I planned. And so I'm beginning to get a little bit frantic. Emmy's quite calm through all of this, but I'm beginning to get a little bit frantic, but that's okay, because everything will be okay, because it always is. So we get off, we're like waiting for the train to stop so we can get off, and then I forgot about this part, but we're like, see the train pull in, and then we're like running to get it, and right when we get to the door and it closes and it takes off, and I was just like come on, like it could have waited like a couple seconds more and we probably would have caught our train, but we didn't. And so we're waiting on this train and then we have to go 4 stops and I'm like, Emmy, we have to pray. So we're praying. I'm praying in tongues out loud because no one understands anyway because you're in Czech. And I'm praying in tongues and Emmy's like, are you praying in tongues? I'm like, pray, Emmy, we have to pray. And so we're praying and I'm like, God, you have to help us catch this train. You have to help us catch this train. And as I'm sitting there, the scripture, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he shall direct your path, comes into my head. And I'm like, yes, I will trust in the Lord. I will trust that the Lord is going to make us catch this train. And I will not lean on my own understanding because my own understanding tells me that we should be on that train already. So we will trust in the Lord and God is just trying to teach me a lesson and I don't know about what, but teach me a lesson and he will direct our path to this train. And so we keep praying. And then the scripture, my thoughts are not your thoughts and your ways are not my ways, comes into my head. And I'm like, well, obviously, because my thoughts meant that we would be there. My ways meant that we would be there. But God, I see what you're doing and I know that you can do anything, so you can stop this train. And so we keep praying, and as I keep praying, I'm realizing that we're probably not going to catch this train, and not because it isn't how I planned it, but because it isn't how God planned it. And I realized that there was a moment where I could just resign myself to whatever God was trying to do. And it took me a while, but once that happened, there was actually so much peace and there was so much joy. And I turned to Emmy and I was just like, I can't believe this is happening. How could this happen to us? And we burst out laughing and we just kept laughing and we ran into the train station, missed our train by 5 minutes. And instead of being able to leave Prague at 10, arrive in Frankfurt at 6, and then arrive in Holland at 10, taking 3 trains, we had to take 7 trains. To get to Frankfurt. And we had to go, we left at 12, arrived at 2 in the morning at this very ex-communist train station and had to wait there from 2 to 4 in the morning. And all the homeless people and all the drunks were coming in and because they have nowhere to stay. And Emmy and I have our bags strapped to our arms and legs and are huddled together and just laughing because we couldn't believe that we are stuck in this train station from 2 to 4 and then catch another train. And so we went on for 7 trains, being on trains for sometime like no more than an hour and running to catch the next connection or having to wait in another train station for an hour. And instead of arriving in Holland at 10 in the morning, just in time for coffee, we arrived at 5 in the evening. And we had no money. Because I only had my visa, but no one takes visa in the Czech in those like small places. We had no money, and no one speaks English because we weren't in any big cities, and no way of calling my mom. And so we just show up at their door at 5, but we had a blast, and it was a lot of fun. And the thing that happened is that last train that we are on, or throughout the day, because it was all during the day. And I was just praying and reading, and that's when God started speaking to me about all of this stuff and about his sovereignty and his ways. And I'm so thankful that things didn't go as my little blue binder had told me that they would. And not that God couldn't have spoken those things to me another time, but it was a great lesson. Now, God is sovereign. He was sovereign in my life. And he is sovereign in your life. And I liked the quote that Arden's ended with last week, where he said about the man he thought that when he got to heaven, he would realize how big God was and realize that he wouldn't have had to worry that much. And I was encouraged by that. But in closing, there's an optimism in all of this that doesn't quite match up with reality. And I felt that there was something that I was missing, that there was my closing was, I didn't have it. And I was praying, I've been praying for that ending, and I still don't really have it. Because it isn't true in my life. I know that God is sovereign, but yet I need to try to find posts to hide behind because I don't feel that way often. And the key that I was missing is how to get knowing this to line up with how I feel. How can I know this but still feel, but still wake up discouraged before the day has even begun? And God never really gave me the answer, because I don't know. But the passage from Isaiah 55 that I had read is entitled Invitation to the Thirsty. And it begins by saying, "Come, all who are thirsty, come to the waters, seek the Lord while he may be found." And then it talks about his ways and his thoughts and his purposes. And it talks about his promises and that none of them will return to him empty, and that we will go out in joy and be led forth in peace. The mountains and hills will burst into song before you, and all the trees of the field will clap their hands. And I don't know if that's the answer, but I think that in that in-between time, when you have heard God's promises or think that you have, and it's not matching, lining up, and in that in-between time before he's opened your mind, I think that I need to, and we need to, all we need to do is come and drink and seek and find. Because God is big, and he is good, and he is sovereign, and none of his plans can be thwarted. And it is when I trust in him and lean not on my own understanding that he fills me with hope and joy, and he directs my paths. And this is all for the Lord's renown, for an everlasting sign which will not be destroyed. Thank you.
Amen. Thank you, Ida. Why don't you guys clap when I preach, eh? Ida Visser is one of our youth leaders. She's also a massage therapist. And Ida, that was wonderful. Just wonderful. Who's on the prayer team this morning? Can I just ask? Can you wave at me? Walter, Zoe, Ruth, Annie. Okay. After the service, these folks are going to come to the front, and we're going to have tea and coffee downstairs. But if you want to find a fresh touch of God in your life, come and be prayed for. If you've got walls around your life that are keeping you back from God's promises, come and be prayed for. God wants to break down those walls, as Bryn said this morning. And you know, the process that Ida has taken us through is just amazing to hear from Jericho and from the life of Christ, and to say, you know, that's how my life is. Isn't that true that we see these incredible promises of God and we get all excited about the promises? We see his touch in our lives. And yet then we go through this silent time where we think, what is going wrong? Reminds me of years ago when I was a little boy. There was always these bumper stickers that said, "Let go and let God." And that's the process that Ida's taken us through this morning, is he is sovereign. Let him. Just let him do his thing. He is sovereign. Trust him. But if you're thirsty, come to him. Come and drink from the water of life. Mike, you want to lead us in a closing song?